So, guten Morgen. Ich, wie schon früher gekündigt wurde, ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch, weil ich wohne in München seit mehr als 13 Jahren und arbeite bei Microsoft auch schon seit 14 Jahren und habe früher mit SQL viel gearbeitet in dem Sinne, wie funktioniert SQL überhaupt in außer den USA, so welche Anforderungen Kunden haben und so weiter. Und dann habe langsam im Bereich vom SQL Customer Advisory Team bewegt und arbeitete dort als ein Architekt mehr oder weniger. Wir heißen bei Microsoft Program Managers, aber es ging um Unterstützen riesengroßen Data Warehouse Projekten. Das war meine Spezialität und BI-Lösungen. Und ich persönlich habe mit mehreren Lösungen gearbeitet, schon damals im Terabyte-Bereich, wo das war so ziemlich selten und Leute wussten nicht, wie diese Lösungen zu bauen und ob Microsoft SQL Server kann das überhaupt unterstützen und so weiter. Ich habe mehrere Kunden im Telekom-Bereichen, dann finanzielle Bereichen gehabt und so weiter und sogar in Deutschland. Und was fand ich ziemlich komisch, ist, wenn man ein Meeting führt und über SQL spricht, dann fällt man einfach in sogenannte Denglisch, weil man sagt SQL Server, Database, Table Structure und so weiter und dann inzwischen ein paar deutsche Worte. Deswegen habe ich gebetet, dass für mich einfacher wird, wenn ich weitere Slides auf Englisch präsentiere. Dann bleiben wir mindestens innerhalb einer Sprache. So, with this statement, I will start in English and as I already said, I was working in the data warehousing area and a lot of BI, I have a lot of BI experience. And then, as of a sudden, you see in my title, I hope I can show you it again, Azure Customer Advisory Team. What does it have to do all together? Interesting is both Azure and SQL Server, they all belong to the same group. So internally at Microsoft, we call it server software and tool businesses, right? It's the same group which develops all solution for cloud and all solution for on-premise SQL Server. Why is this important? Because you can understand, and in a couple of words, try to summarize it and explain to you what investment Microsoft does and what is the strategy for the future. And I'll start a little bit from retrospective overview because, like, when engaging with customers, as I said, we used to work with terabyte scale databases with hundreds and thousands of concurrent users and complex reporting, etc. At the same time, we saw what the data centers themselves, they started to evolve into different way when before. Like previously, if you want to have massive, huge database, you would go and buy huge, massive server with a lot of cores, with a lot of memory, with a huge SAN attached to this. And then with the time, you see what more and more IT groups started building something which is, my understanding sounds like a cloud a little bit. People started to invest more and investigate more how the virtualization can help their businesses because the performance of the single query become not that as important as the throughput. People started to see more advantages in scaling out workload or building, like buying a large machine and hosting there more and more VMs. So the troubleshooting all this infrastructure become more critical rather than tuning of the single query because you can separate workloads and you can make sure they run independently. And you really do care about how much users can you pass through your application instead of whether a single user will get excellent performance or not. The scale of the solution become larger and larger. Another thing what we started to observe as well with enabling a lot of mobile devices and like such like iPhones, Android, iPads and all the tablets possible, right? People started to use internet more and started to use it more disconnected. Like if you see a lot of people want to have the same experience if they sit within their infrastructure and can access report. as well if they go to customer, or as well if they just somewhere on vacation and then just taken their tablet and then wanted to check something, right? They want to have exactly the same experience accessing their data. In addition to that, by the way, how many of you have played casual games like Angry Birds, something like this? Come on, guys. Yeah, now I believe. So the thing is, if you look at the games, you must have experience already, right? A lot of game providers, they store information not in device anymore. They store it somewhere else in the cloud. So for you, it is cloud because it's outside of any infrastructure you can access personally, right? So next time you go connect, they take your latest scores and etc. And then you start from where you stopped before, right? This means what? It is not the same infrastructure as we used to have. People don't buy service for this anymore. Nobody really goes and builds their own data center for hosting your data score, game score, and experience, right? They try to offload it somewhere else. This is where cloud comes into the game, because it enables people, enables this type of solutions where you don't really care about how your infrastructure will look like. You just go and order some compute power, some data storage, and you build your solution, and you don't really pay attention to how many servers, how many cores, and etc. The throughput is more important. And the same with business applications. We mentioned already, people want not only have the data accessible when they on the way and wanted to check something, but also they want to add some data which are not which were usually not that classical for the, let's say, data warehousing workloads, and people want to access it not only like in the not as they used to do it in forms of report, like once a day and etc. People want to access it quicker. What does it mean? And they want to correlate it with some other data. Like before, we work on many customer examples where people start batching their data into their data warehouse overnight. When the business users were coming to the office, the reports, the data for reports were there. So the business user can open Excel or go to reporting service, access their data. That was classical path. Right now people say like, oh, I want to correlate my sales with sentiment analysis. So like go to Facebook and analyze how my brand name look like versus yesterday what people say on Facebook about my stuff. It's very interesting because in many cases it could help. We work with or at least I'm aware what, for example, companies like Nestle are doing this type of analysis, and we work with partner of us, PM1. The Nestle wants to align their sales or analyze their sales with how the buzz around their product goes and then the internet, right? From another side, if you look at the other examples, it was really funny. When we worked with Mercedes, they recognized what the sentiment analysis was very negative for them, unless they understood what the target group, what they were selecting, was really wrong. So the typical user of the Facebook or typical user of any kind of social network is in the age under, I would say, 30, 35 years, right? Whereas Mercedes traditionally is the company which is like respectful, solid, and targeting a little bit older age, right? And marketing was clever enough to go back and analyze what and see what the people in the age under 35, at least in Germany, a lot of them don't have their own cars. They drive father's car or somebody else. Therefore, the analysis of the social buzz about the brands or the new cars coming was not very positive. So still, it was attempt to merge some unstructured data, which do not reside inside your infrastructure, into your typical data warehousing workload. And therefore, what Microsoft is working on is not only on kind of supporting classical old-style businesses, but also looking forward and seeing how can we help you building solutions which correspond to the newer trends. So there is a lot of new businesses and new business models was opened with enabling cloud computing. Now, if we look at the key trends, it's also very interesting. You see what the price Actually, let's start from different thing. If you know, the clock speed of the CPUs didn't grow since many, many years now. So the what is the current highest clock speed? I think it's 3 gigahertz, right? And the most actual processors, they all at the top get 3 gigahertz, but what grows is the number of cores, right? So we are not progressing in increasing speed, so that means what single calculation, if it hands on single core, is not getting faster. The only way to increase your performance is to parallel process all this stuff, so make many cores working for you. And from another side, what we definitely see, and this is actually one of the reasons why cloud computing was enabled, memory and overall hardware components becoming cheaper and cheaper. So that, but memory is extremely important for us. Why? Because we're getting now computers with amounts of memory like in terabyte ranges now, which was nearly impossible a few years ago. Or it, well, it, they were relatively expensive too. And Gartner, and in their last reports, they see what a lot more classical and the new businesses go and use cloud. So adoption of the cloud grows, and the reason for that, because it enables new business models. What brings together is what data exploration becomes more and more important. So people want to analyze structured data as well as not structured. You see what in the was interesting. I was in the US a couple of months ago, and we spoke with people who work in the predictive analysis business, right? And they say what in the American companies, the most demanding work and pretty much expensive is the data scientist. So analyst and the data scientist. There is a lot of openings, so if you're looking for the new job, you can apply. And that means what the demand of understanding data and getting meaningful feedback from this data getting more and more important. And in the percentage, you see what the new businesses, they have a demand in analyzing non-structured data. It is in the range of 85% versus the rest, which is classical structured tabular. And that means that also important because people want to get it soon. So the classical way, what we used to do in the past, like you get non-structured data, you convert it into, you transform into something structured, it takes time, but you have a process running for this, and people don't want to wait until your ETL is done. They want to explore data now, and you need to give them tools for that, right? Therefore, we talk still about mission critical performance, faster insight from any data, and platform for the hybrid cloud. Mission critical gets a little bit differently defined here. Before, mission critical was what if your application is down, right, you start losing money. This is not the only definition nowadays, because now it's not about whether your application runs or not, it's also about how fast can you do some things to support your business, right? It's not only about availability of application, it's also about the speed, how quick can you react to the market change or the situation, and how the platform can support you in doing this. And let's talk about what's coming in SQL Server 2014, so it's in the box, right? We are getting memory, actually more memory structures, memory build engines, or whatever you call it. So basically, in the memory analysis. If you remember in SQL Server 2012, we spoke about non-clustered column store indices. That was first attempt to bring the data in the memory. Right now, we adding up in SQL Server 2014 also clustered column store index. This is another version, fully in memory structure, and works way more efficient than non-clustered index for particular scenarios. But also, we introduce tables, in-memory tables, and we'll talk about benefits of that in a second. Still, important for people, secure and scalable. Secure, everyone remembers the NSA scandal, right? Security becomes very, very important topic, and often it's not about whether NSA will look into your data or not. It's more about whether the product is compliant with particular standards, and whether the product is sustainable versus some hacker attacks or viruses and etc. And here we've got also a couple of advanced functionalities, and also we have actually great track of record, because since, let's say, 2005, the vulnerability of SQL Server went significantly down. We've got significantly reduced the number of service calls in our support organization, which releases people for doing something interesting, right? Availability of the service. We've done some extra work to make SQL Server even more highly available. Also, talk about that in a bit more in details in a couple of slides. And so, in-memory build, classical example. We've got one company, very unknown, probably Bivin, right? These guys work with Microsoft since many, many years, and they are actively engaging in prototyping and validating of the functionality. And what we can say about this company, this is one of very seldom examples where you can see direct match between the speed of transaction with the income what company does, or revenue what company does. So, and they were validating our in-memory tables. So basically the difference is with this regular tables, typical table is stored on the disk. Right now in SQL Server 2014, you can define the table which completely resides in memory, right? And we changed also locking model there. We call it as a optimistic model. So basically the locking is treated differently in the engine, and therefore it enables way, way higher throughput. We saw up to 50 times better query performance throughput in the particular solutions. And one of the advantages of this in-memory technology is what actually from the application side, it is completely transparent. So you had table foo, you still have table foo. And application can operate with this table, do updates, inserts, and etc. But the throughput of the queries on this table increases significantly. So speaking of the Bivin, they got about 60 times faster throughput on the query on the queries in the most hot table, so to say, right? And you can imagine it was automatically reflected in the revenue of the company. Funny enough, we talk about throughput when we talk about in-memory technologies, particularly we always refer to the OLTP type of queries, right? It's like banking, financial, this gaming environment, for example. But these in-memory technologies can be also very interestingly used for other workloads as well. Like one of the problematic areas for the data warehousing was so-called staging, right? You know that. So because you couldn't load data directly in the table because report is currently running there, what you do typically, you have a staging table and you load from the staging table into the table where the data will be persisted in a historical way. And typically it is a number of operational and coding efforts. Right now you can move staging into the in-memory table, and therefore the speed of how fast can you get data and make it available for the analysis in the data warehouse is getting faster as well. Well, I spoke about security, so you can see a graph. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this, like how the number of cases for particular database platform changes over the time. So SQL goes pretty much down. What I want to talk is scalability. A couple of tricks we knew even before. Like if you work in a large scale data warehouse solution and you know what for particular workloads you need to separate how they access resources, right? Because even in data warehouse you have like long running queries which go over historical data, and they're pretty much slow. They sit on the table for quite a long period of time. But you also have areas like staging where, or the partitions where we call it hot partition, where the data still changing a lot before they become like more or less static, right? So therefore, with the help of resource governor, we could control a little bit how the CPU and memory will be utilized. So for particular workloads, we could dedicate the amount of memory they can access and the amount of CPU they can eat, right? And we also used trick of teaming. But the problem was what we couldn't control I/O, right? Because for particular workloads, like the hot table, where you do a lot of changes, you probably would want to have I/O a little faster rather than for I/O where you do typical scan. Scan is a long latency, right? Request, and it allocates access to the it sits on the storage for longer time, right? So therefore, you know, if your report will be finished in 1 hour or 1 hour 10 minutes, it doesn't really matter, right? But for the hot data, it might be a little bit more important. So in 2014, we've got finally resource governor which can control and I/O access as well. So therefore, what you can do now, you can apply all this trick together, like using the NIC teaming in Windows Server 2012. You can affinitize your workload to particular set of the CPUs, and by using groups, the resource governor group, so you can assign also workload with particular I/O. So it becomes more comprehensive how you can control your workload within the SQL Server instance. Now, another important point is high availability. High availability is actually a very interesting topic because how many of you have a critical application where the SLA for having database highly available is less than 1 hour? And the availability is critical and should be SLAs less than 5 minutes, let's say. Nobody, right? So the thing is, there is natural gradation here about how the SLA applies to particular workloads and typically the price, right? It's or price performance, like how much do I lose if my database or my solution is not available for a period of time. And interestingly, as we spoke with many, many customers in the project, typically when you start project and you ask a question like, how available should be your database, like 24/7, no restriction? How much you want to pay for this? And then it starts, right? So, like, because typically the higher the high available the application, the more investments you should do. And at some, like, if you speak about nines, right? If you speak about five nines, it's not about, it's not only about hardware what you put into the highly available solution. It's not about platform what you put on top of this, but it also some operational administrative overhead. Because if you want to have five nines implemented in your infrastructure, you typically do not trust the vendor saying like, oh, my hardware is the very highly available. We've got here RAID storages, and we've got here the cluster where you can build, blah, blah, blah. There must be a man sitting behind all this infrastructure and pressing the button when something happened, right? Only then you can achieve five nines. This means what investments go a little bit beyond investing into the platform and the hardware, right? But Microsoft makes some investments here still too to simplify and reduce the cost of availability of your solution. In 2012, we released a functionality which is called Always On. And the idea here behind the Always On, who has Always On implemented in the infrastructures? Well, great to hear. And so I will try not to go that deep in explaining how it works. But the high level idea is following. You've got like your primary cluster or primary server, which accepts all the main work, right? And then you have a number of replicas. Before always on, the only way how you can offload or make the copy highly available was either cluster or the replication. Cluster, if you build the cluster, then your second node was almost always in the so-called cold reserve, right? So if your primary node is working, then the second node is just staying in the corner and smoking. People were trying to implement some kind of active workloads by putting some other workloads in another box and like doing this cross failover strategies and etc. It all good, but it was not supported on the level of platform. So this is this required your creativity a little bit. What we did in 2012, we, with the help of actually new technologies like shared storage and etc. and asymmetric storage, what we could do is we can take your primary workload on the main server and create a number of replicas for you. Some of them could be synchronous, so it's for extremely highly available and for extremely resistant against the failure solutions. And some asynchronous, this is where you can lose actually part of the transactions running on your, or changes running on your system, without losing the consistency of the business flow, so to say, right? Some people use this technology also for offloading the workloads. Like one of the main issues if you run everything on the main on the one server is you need to change the data, you do updates, inserts, and etc. And then if you have some reporting systems coming there, you always have contention, right? So if you change some fields, the report will wait until the fields are released, so the logs released, so you can go and build your select report, so run your select statement, which was causing some delays and how fast can the report be delivered to the user. Always on is enabling your, so it has a copy of your data and it's readable. So therefore you can use your replicas to run these reports there and it doesn't block anything. So actually, always on is the evolution of the mirroring, with a lot of things change under the hood. So way, way more easier to use and to scale. What changes in 2014, though, is before we were limited to 4 replicas. In 2014, we enable up to 8 replicas, so asynchronous and synchronous. And as example, I worked with one company called Baltica Brewery. You probably don't know this name. It's one of the largest breweries in Russia with a history like they were in, built first in somewhere Soviet Union times, right? Right now, this brewery belongs to the Carlsberg concern. And funny enough, as far as I know, they actually bring the most of the revenue to the Carlsberg. So they could have bought Carlsberg nowadays. Anyway, because the beer is so popular in this country. one of the things what they the workload what they have is brewery has a lot of the dealers, and dealers are different size. It could be something like, you know, I don't know, Aldi is in, you have Aldi in Austria, right? Okay, so like these large chains, right? Or Plus you have, right? Anyway, so this stores, right? And they can purchase stuff in trucks. So it's like several trucks going every day. And you also have some little kiosk which buy like one paleta, I think it's called, so like several boxes of beer, and then they're done. All day coming through the single server and trying offload their purchase orders, as well as when they offload their purchase orders, they want to see which sentiments they have, like if they get special discounts because of the amount of beer they sold and etc. So it's kind of interactive process. They a huge batch load, and from another side some reporting running on the background. Before 2012, actually everything was done using peer-to-peer replication to separate loads, right? So they've got about 4 servers where you can log in, and they would have pretty much identical information about the end user. And this replication was actually a little bit tuned by the company called Monolith. So it was custom replication built to, in order to remove the impact of the cross logs, right? So when you update some field for particular user, so what they still can read on the replica, what's relevant for this user, and separate write and read workloads, very complex solution. And at some time, they recognize that this doesn't scale anymore. So after, I think they had about 8 replicas, they started seeing much higher overhead on synchronizable and the stuff rather than on getting throughput. And in 2012, they went and switched to the always-on technology. And here's the graph, what you see. This is what happened with number of transactions coming into the system and the latency on executing transaction. This is the classical replication schema. So the more transactions you have, the more latency was introduced to the query, so they were slower. And 2012 is always on, it was pretty much flat. So the throughput of the business queries was not impacted by the amount of simultaneously connected users and etc. Was great in 2012, still one problem. They required 8 replicas. So therefore, in order to keep the solution working there, they had them to implement kind of hybrid solution between always on and parts of the replication. And therefore, they were not happy because they had to still to support replica. And if someone of you has experience working with transaction replication, you know, it is great when it works. Exclamation mark. Right? So with always on, it's way all easier because you don't care about this distribution agent, the subscriptions, and etc. It's all pretty much easy to manage and support. So customers really happy, and like a couple of numbers of them, they have 1,500 back offices, so the locations where the data should be aggregated. They have about 100,000 orders. This is what they call business transaction, actually. And 50,000 distributors around the geography, what they support, right? And this is all 24/7 service. You can imagine, when I was visiting them one day, and they brought very nice illustration of what the 24/7 means for them. As I was sitting in the IT office, the windows were going out and to the parking place where all the trucks were loaded and sent out, right? They said 1 hour delay, and they had this problem for 3 hours one day when the developer did the wrong change to the system, and the system basically hung, right? So in 1 hour, this parking place was full. If it's 3 hours, you start staying outside of the place where the Baltica is located and blocking all the streets. So because the guys cannot send truck out without giving them like paperwork signed, right? And the system, the main CRM system and the ERP system, they were responsible for like supporting all the production and shipping as well. So if system hangs, they literally see it, right? And management really not happy with seeing so many trucks parked around the company. Now, talking about high availability, there are other perspectives of the high availability. It's not only about whether your application is up and running. It's also how fast can you, or how available your data are. And if you worked with SQL for a long time, especially if you have some data warehousing experience, sorry, I'm repeating data warehousing because I love this subject, and there is a lot of interesting things going there. And one of the pain points there was if you have large table, and we talk about million and million rows, right? And typically, the most painful experience was what happens to my tail of the table. So if you have incremental inserts, then often when reporting query was coming, you see absolutely crazy plans because like large table, just tail updated, the statistic is not correct anymore, right? So therefore next query it comes, it destroys, it gets the plan, the worst plan ever, you can imagine, right? Therefore we had couple of tricks how you can improve this experience. One of the tricks was absolutely stupid and rude, right? You just disable statistics at all on the large tables, right? And hinted or whatever. It was pretty much painful to manage and support this environment. And what finally happened in 2014, and we came, hey, hooray, right? We've got incremental statistics on the large tables. So basically, if you partition, you can create incremental statistics. And what it gives you, you can do partition rebuild also on the partition level only. Before, what you do, if you see what you need to rebuild partition, you typically switch out the partition, you rebuild there offline, and switch it in again. Switch required exclusive lock on the table. Great, exclusive lock on the table means no reports possible, right? So you have to finish your operation. And then if you have to finish your operation, the business user wait, right? So now you can rebuild partition without putting this exclusive lock anymore. And lock priorities changed. We've been asking for that many, many years. Because what basically happens? You can add your data to the table, right? But if you need to switch in partition, for example, to add another data to your table or to add another region of data, so the exclusive lock will be put on the partition on the table again. What that means, what all what comes after will wait until the query executes, even if it's 1 millisecond, right? So you will still stop your queries and wait until this lock gets released. Right now, it's not full implementation of what we wanted, but it still helps you to achieve a lot more with the large tables. You can put priority. So you can say, okay, I will wait for switching the new partition until all queries gone or until only low priority query there. So, and this allows you to automate and to be more flexible in how you treat and manage your databases or tables. Now, let's talk a little bit also data insights. This is BI part of our work, right? And in 2014, we brought a couple of things, and this is actually, we're starting getting a little bit more cloudish in this discussion, because some of the components, they become available with release of 2014, but they were not developed for SQL Server 2014 in the box particularly. This is like parallel development, which was happening together with 2014, right? You can search, you can extract, and you can manipulate the external data with the same experience, like self-service BI user, with the same experience as you did it with the data in your on-premise infrastructures. And let's actually switch to the how can you analyze your data now, right? You have Excel, which is the most traditional tool. We hear it from many, many users, and especially large enterprise, but the business users do not want to know anything but Excel, because it's familiar interface, because they know how to write formulas there. We have added in 2012 some visualizations there as well. I know what Gerhard will be talking about, how to do very comprehensive things, so I recommend going to his session. And from another side, what came recently, we introduced Power BI SKU. This is basically extensions of Office 365. Office 365 is the pure cloud environment where you can share and collaborate your data with other groups of people, right? So instead of being bound to your infrastructure, you can enable it also outside of your company. And you can put reports there, and you can analyze it together with other people. And one of the things, the project called codenamed Data Explorer, now it's called Power Query. This is one of the very interesting things which came with Office 365 recently in this Power BI offering. Basically, what you can do, you can connect to any external or internal data source and do personal ETL. So before, if you wanted to analyze some data, you would need to go to IT, you would need to explain them what you want. The guys will analyze the data, create a SSIS package, and make a table specially for you in the database, right? Took pretty much long. Data analysis, and we spoke about this a little bit before, they need access to the data sometimes very, very quickly in order to understand whether this data is reasonable or needed for business at all or not, right? So therefore, Power Query is built in Excel functionality, which allows you to connect to external data source, doesn't matter if within your infrastructure or somewhere internet, and you can do with very simple manipulations your transformation and then present this data in the form of Excel table again. Right? Once you did it, you can of course use tools like Power Pivot for analyzing it and for Power View for making the graphical representation of this data. It's pretty much cool things. And then once you did that, you can offload this report to Office 365 and make it available for many, many other users. The interesting thing though, with the Data Hub connection, this is something what works behind the Office 365. You can connect your report, which you created on your computer, for example, right? You can offload it in 365 and make it connected to your data source if it's inside your company. And it doesn't sound that fascinating, like hooray and etc. But think about before, how would you make connection to your infrastructure without including IT? This would be in many, many cases. I work for Microsoft. We have very strict, policies with regards of how do I connect from outside to inside, right? With Data Hub, the process is so simplified what you don't even need to involve IT. It's restricted to your server, for example, right? The process is you generate particular certificate and you make a trusted connection between your 365 environment and the cluster, but you don't go to IT anymore and ask like, oh, for this connection I need to open the port, and then you need to write justification and send it to your manager. Manager sends it to the guys who prove whether it's aligned with internal policies or not. So it's pretty much all easy and cool. And then if you have report loaded in 365, you can load it into nearly every device, because we support now iOS, we support Android, as well as Windows tablet and the phones. And now the time comes to talk a little bit cloud in conjunction with 2014 and cloud alone. I put hybrid here in the brackets because, interestingly enough, a lot of customers who move into the cloud, they often move more and more parts of their infrastructure in the cloud, and then some of them, some of the project even gets built in the cloud only, right? The beauty of the cloud, you wouldn't believe, it is how fast can you get your compute resources or the development environment built and available. One of the examples here, we worked with one German company. It's a family business, but very, very known. And we spoke with the business users with regards of how fast can they get extra server for like reporting and for BI needs. And first of all, this is, I don't know if it's in Austria the same. In Germany, a lot of large companies, they outsource their hardware infrastructures. They don't own it anymore. So they go to some vendor, and vendor buys them hardware. So in order to get one more or less not very exciting server, like 4, 8, 16 cores, you need to write, again, to your manager. You need to ask for money. You need to write the justification for that. Then this order goes to the vendor. Vendor puts the order against the hardware vendor, and like typical flow until you get server available for you starting development was 3 to 6 months. And if you remember last year, was it right, when the typhoon destroyed or flooded the plants in one of the disk vendors in Japan, right? it took more than half a year. The people were waiting for about a year to get hardware in place, right? In the cloud, you go there, you click, create new VM, you get pretty much decent VMs within like 15 minutes. You just can connect to it and start developing your solution. But let's talk about different ways how you can leverage cloud, particularly in the hybrid solution. First thing, you can use it as a backup scenario, because storage in the cloud is very cheap. If you compare storage in the cloud to storage what you pay in premises usually, it is highly available and very cheap. It costs like several cents per gigabyte, right? And SQL Server 2012 already had the functionality called backup to URL, right? And this worked actually pretty much well. You can make it multi-streams. You just click on, go through the wizard, and you can point to the URL location and load your data to the blob storage in the cloud, which is very straightforward and easy. And then you don't need to waste money and resources for keeping your backup somewhere locally. Typically, people don't buy very expensive storage for that, but still, it's your electricity, it requires some support as well. You need somebody to take care of the storage, whereas in the cloud, you pay the price and you're done. It's done. You don't care about that. And storage account typically has some redundancy. It is geographically replicated alone in the same cluster or in the same cloud infrastructure. It has RAID built in, so therefore it cannot simply die. But for the case if customer wants to be like 100% sure nothing will be lost, we also support geographical replica. So therefore, for your application, it's absolutely transparent. You still have the same URL to put in your backup script. But in case if, like, let's say, bomb or flooding happen in particular geographical location, you still have access to another geography, and there your data will be available. Another thing is you can use HA solutions, the same like we talked about Baltica. You can use HA and put your readable copies, for example, of the data, basically create instances of your services in the cloud and make external users access in it. We worked with one car vendor, and what they did actually, they offloaded some data about car components, which they were purchasing from some other vendors, into the cloud. So what the others could proactively go and check for report if the vendor needs another shipment of parts, right, or not. And this actually enables a little bit different art of business between the companies, right? If before you will be waiting and negotiating like how much and when and etc., right now the report is always available externally, and just need go and refresh it and get access to this and you're done. So you can expand significantly amount of people accessing your data if you need it. Now, interesting thing, what works here as well, there are several ways how you can make this availability working for you. There are technologies, they are not a part of SQL, but still very cool features. It is called site-to-site connectivity and point-to-site connectivity. They both allow to expand connection between your primary server, for example, to the cloud server. In case of point-to-site connectivity, you expand it as a VPN, dedicated VPN between your machine and the machine in the cloud. Why is this important? Because, let me talk quickly about site-to-site a little bit. Site-to-site is, you basically go and tell to your cloud infrastructure, you belong now to my domain, right? So how it happens, you need to have some hardware here in on-premises, this guy, and you need to go to IT and ask them what the particular domain outside of the virtual network, outside of their infrastructure, will be connected to your domain network, the same as if it was like just another subdomain in within your company, right? This requires some hardware. in many cases it's really worthwhile effort because you get an easier connection from many other applications and tools to the machine which is in the cloud. But in some cases it can become problematic, so like all the negotiations against about policy compliance and etc. Point2sci is way faster to set up. You just create a one-to-one VPN between those two machines. It goes over the HTTP, all connection works. It's really great, easy to install. You spend like 10-15 minutes if you never did it yourself. You go through the documentation and you've got your machine visible from the infrastructure. And that's how the always on works as well, because you need to have direct connection to machine as if it was staying next to your box and on premise. Okay. Yeah, and very important scenario, not to forget about that, is cloud bursting. Basically, in many, many cases, what happens, and we have variety of customer scenarios already support, we've worked on them as a project, cloud bursting. That means what in some particular workloads, I can give you example, actually, a concrete example is a company which was processing tax report. Right, tax report, people do it usually when? In the last day, right? It's don't ask me why, it's our nature, right? We wait with this until really last moment. Actually, the same with the teeth doctor, right? We go really in the last moment there. And those guys had really big problem with capacity planning, because they say, like, if we go and buy 128-core machine with a lot of memories, we can probably get this peak processed the last day basically workload, but within the months or how often they submit their tax report, depending whether you're private or it's a company, etc. So within the months it was staying and just burning the air, right? The capacity were not used. And therefore what they thought with the cloud opportunity, with the cloud offering, they bought actually not that big machine for controlling the workload overall, so basically for accepting requests. And then they were rerouting, in the case of the peak hours, other requests to the cloud compute. The same, I think, actually Bivin did for some gambling part, where they, for each individual user, like where the football game is happening, right? So you have certain period of times when you can commit your bets, right? And guess when the peak hour is happening? It's really like when the last seconds before the bet can get closed. Therefore, what they did, they offloaded the data in the SQL Azure. So you basically, as an individual, you go like for your mobile phone or whatever, you put your bet. For you will be the database created in the background. This database is only dedicated for you, so therefore you can raise, you can decrease your bet until the really last second. When this happened, they were loading all the data, so when the time is coming, they were loading all the data in their primary machine and then calculating the wins and losses and etc. So like bursting, so offloading workloads outside of your infrastructure is a really cool feature. And I've got a few minutes left. We'll try to speed up a little bit here. So, as I said, one of the beauties of cloud is how easy you can start and deploy your solution. There are tools what Microsoft already developed, like Migration Wizard, SQL VMs. It's basically VM which you can put in the cloud and work with it as it was just regular server. And Windows Azure SQL Azure databases is when you don't need to have all this granularity of the control of the VM. You just say, I need the database and I don't care where it sits, right? And I will create a couple of tables there. So SQL Azure database could be a nice offering. 2014 has a very cool feature, and I wanted to talk about that. Typically, again, sorry, data warehousing workload. You have groups of I/O requests what you want to manage. Like for the hot tables, you want to have extremely fast, extremely expensive I/O. For more or less historical data, right, like last month or last couple of days, you want to have good enough storage, which is quite expensive, but not as fast as the primary one. And for the data, which called archive data, you wanted to have extremely cheap storage because most likely you wouldn't even go there. Like you normally people were having the storage for compliance. Like if you go to telecoms, they obliged to store the data for the last 6 or 10 years, right? And they have to be curable, so you cannot just backup it and tape, right, and put tape somewhere in the storage and seller, right? You need to have this data curable. So what you can do in 2014, you can create your file group and put the data in the cloud blob storage. This is still accessible, this is still queryable, but you pay cents instead of dollars or hundreds of dollars per megabyte of the storage or per gigabyte of the storage. The DDL is completely the same. The only thing what changes is the path. As you see, like it HTTPS endpoints to your VHD. And again, we guarantee the availability. You don't invest into availability of the storage at all. So we do it for you with redundancy you have in the data center and the geo redundancy across the data centers. We tested a couple of scenarios. If you haven't seen that, who knows Fast Track Data Warehousing white paper? Quite a few people who bought it once at least have their that stuff in their infrastructure. Not that many. Anyway, the Fast Track reference architecture guide was developed by my group, right, and a couple of guys from SQL team. And it is about how you create a balanced data warehouse, like assuming what we know how the warehousing workload looks like. And we made the recommendation on the hardware and then layout of the database. When the cloud came, we also tested this approach in the cloud, and like in September last year, we published a document about, and you can go and try the VM in the Azure dashboard, create a VM which will be particularly configured for the data warehousing workload in the cloud. So what we tested that, well, we applied the same approach, but on the cloud machines and like paid attention to what's different between hardware and what the cloud can offer. You can go build it. And one of the things what we tested and we upgraded this to the SQL Server 2014, and we used clustered column store index approach. And here's the graph. You see results of how the performance improved in the SQL Server 2014 VM in the cloud. We've got up to 50% query performance better in SQL Server with clustered column store index, because it's mostly in memory, it doesn't have that much of the I/O footprint. It's great technology and enables you additional workloads, even like performance critical workflows in the cloud as well. If you don't care about this, if you just do care about having database available and like not The query performance, single query performance is not that critical. You do care about more like how you scale it better. SQL Azure Database can be an offering for you. And we introduced recently premium offering. So before, if you know, your database would sit in multi-tenant environment and your neighbors who sit in the same instance, it has all the availability stories behind. It's very convenient to use, especially for development purposes. But the problem was if you got pretty much busy neighbor because of the sharing of the lock drive, because of the sharing TempDB and etc., the busy neighbor could make your database running slower. Premium offering makes sure what the environment where your database will reside in our infrastructure will not be shared with anyone. So if you are SV, for example, and you sell your solutions like accounting solution or CRM system, you might be interested in using premium because then you have more or less identical workload across the tenant, right? And therefore you can balance the workload there and by aggregating similar workloads within the same infrastructure. It's pretty much cheap, very convenient to use. And one of the stories what I wanted to mention as well before I finish my presentation, recent Olympic Games, all the CMS system and telemetry system for the web front end was running on SQL in Azure. So some parts on Azure databases, some parts on the Azure VMs. And we've got about 100 million visitors during the game period. This is so far the most visited website in the history. So we haven't got this type of workload even when we released Pottermore. And Azure sustained it. Nobody heard of any downtimes. Well, we've got some MCS guys sitting 24/7 at the Sochi directly, so they were monitoring the system and etc. But it has proven what the structure, and this is purely cloud infrastructure. There was no single machine sitting on premise. So reliable and very good experience. And I think I'm done actually. So. SQL Server 2014, together with multiple releases like Power BI offering, etc., it enables a lot more possibilities. What can you do with your data? Structured, non-structured data, self-service BI, a lot of different approaches, a lot of different cool things what you can do. And the only thing what I can tell you, it is available, so the release version will be available very soon. For a preview, you can go download it and start it. So go and try it. See what's new. See how does it fit into your workload. And I was asked to show this slide for the next sessions coming. Before that, any questions? Or after this introduction, I would take questions.
Thank you very much, Alexei. Vielen Dank. Wir sind mit der Keynote jetzt fertig. Wir haben einen Überblick bekommen über SQL Server 2014, der demnächst kommen wird, die Microsoft-Applikationsplattform. Wie geht's weiter? Wir haben jetzt 30 Minuten Pause. Wir werden die beiden großen Räume teilen, also hier und nebenan. Und wir haben ab dann 4 parallele Vortragsslots, Präsentationsstreams, die ich schon vorher erwähnt habe. Und an den Türen sind auch entsprechend die Themen angeschlagen. Ja? Das heißt, es geht weiter um 11 Uhr. Dankeschön.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And if you have questions, I will take it here. Or you can ask it directly from your seat. No questions. Cool. Thanks, guys. Then enjoy the day and sessions.